TalkZone.com.
A streak of fire, a breath of flame, eluding all who reach and clutch. A gray ghost thrown into the game that rival hands may never touch. A rubber-bounding, blasting soul whose destination is the goal, Red Grange of Illinois by Grantland Rice. For many of us, names like Butkus, Nitschke, and Grange are more than mere players on a field. They represent the history, the glory, and the spirit of a university that has contributed so much to this country and has made our lives rich beyond anything we may offer in return. If Virginia belongs to Jefferson, then surely the land-grant legislation proposed and signed by Abraham Lincoln in 1865 gave birth to his home state university in 1867 and countless other institutions for the people, of the people, and by the people. We are the living legacy of Father Abraham's great institution. Sons and daughters of Illinois, our renaissance, in the words of Ron Gunther, is now. From Chicago, the greatest sports city in America, we are proud to bring you Talking Illini with Boz and Mr. G.
Hello, Illini Nation. This is Talking Illini with Boz and Mr. G on TalkZone.com. And Mr. G is back in his chair.
It feels like somebody's been sitting in my chair, Boz.
Welcome back. Da-da-da-da-da.
By the way, she has a much smaller butt than I do, too.
Yeah, well, I hate to tell you, but she was sitting here and I was sitting there. I moved into the captain's seat, put both hands on the wheel, steered it here, steered it there.
What was it like working solo the first week I was out of town? And by the way, I was overseas for 2 weeks. It's great to be back in Chicago and great to be back with you, Boz.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. G. You're looking good, looking a little refreshed. The hair's flowing nicely.
Presidential hair.
Presidential Bill Carmody hair, excuse me. I got a little bug today. I'm going to be fighting through here.
Playing hurt, Boss.
Don't have any orange, but you got the nice blue tie, blue shirt, looking very dapper. You got a big meeting after the show?
Or, absolutely.
I thought we were going to lunch.
We're going to do a quick lunch, and then I've got a meeting.
Okay, fine. What was it like doing solo? Actually, it wasn't bad with the help of our guests, and one of the main guests was Brad Sturdy, and it was great. It was holiday hoop time, and Brad was going from Pekin to Pontiac and stayed on the line with us for a good 40 minutes or so. Took some callers. Actually, Brad's got some fans. We took a call from Houston, talked all about recruiting, talked about the team, talked about all the recruits, the 09 recruits, the 10, the 11s. Tracy Abrams' coach came on.
Do you get the feeling that Brad is more of a house organ, that he is allied with the administration and the coaching staff, and it's very difficult for him to say anything but good things about the program?
I'll be honest. Both, the way Scout and Rivals works, from what I've learned this past, since we got involved in all this, is that, they more or less have a franchise, if you will, for the Illinois page. So, they don't want to rock any boats. They've worked hard to establish relationships, to get inside scoops. The coaches, seem to call them back, and they have a free rein, to get information. So they're not looking to rock anybody's boat. They're looking to provide us, the fans, some good new news, and I guess, they're in the media like our friends Mark Tupper, who will join us at 12:20, and Herb Gould, and Lindsey Wilhite, and Osmussen. They're all, sometimes battling to get the story first. I think Osmussen broke the story on Schultz last week. So to answer your question, I don't want to say total homers, but they're out there for the good of the Illini, and that's fine with me.
Do you think any of the beat guys or any of the scout guys or the rivals guys, if they had information that was really negative, would they come forth with it?
Not the scout and rival guys, but I think, and this is something we can ask Tupps at 12:20, but I think if they had real substantiated, proven information that didn't make the university or the programs look good, but it was real, they would come forward. I'm hesitating a little because simply, you know...
And by the way, I'm not hypothecating or saying that anything is going on. I'm just saying, you know, from a journalistic standpoint, I see these guys. I see how they operate. They're so close to these programs. They're so dependent on the administration, on the coaches, for information, for their livelihood. Could they publish something or could they say something that would be so detrimental to them on a professional level and yet maintain their journalistic integrity?
I think so, because these guys, most of them, have been around longer than the current administration. And, you know, the administration and coaches go, you know, through the revolving door a lot longer than the media. So I believe so. Obviously, when things get into the legal environment, into the blotter or whatever, that stuff's fair game for everybody. But, you know, if there was something that hadn't hit the police blotter yet and they knew something, I would like to think that they would report it. Maybe they'd go to Gunther or a coach first to say, listen, I've got this information and I'm pretty confident it's true. And I feel for the situation, and maybe you should look into this before I write it. I don't know. That'll be a good question for Tufts.
By the way, you can reach us at 888-463-6748 or email us at talkingalini@yahoo.com. We've got a couple gift certificates to give out today. Call us or email us. Be our caller or emailer of the day. Great lineup of guests today, Buzz. We have one mystery guest who will appear on early in the show. But tell us about who we're going to have on the show
today,
Buzz.
Well, we mentioned Mark Tupper from Decatur Herald and Review at 12:20, and then Kenny Battle's going to join us in studio sometime after 1 to talk some hoops, and we'll catch up with Kenny, see what's going on in his life. Last time we talked, he talked about his son playing ball. Was his son in middle school?
His son is a sophomore. He's playing on the sophomore team. They're going to move him up. He's averaging about 25 points a game on the sophomore team. I was kind of surprised that he was not playing varsity ball yet, though. He missed the summer, played AAU ball in the summer, and I guess the coaches are bringing him along a little bit slower than he would like. He's shooting a great percentage from the outside. He's about 6'2", nice hops, understandably, good speed, and Kenny says that he's a size 13 and still growing.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point you make about your surprise about not being on varsity quite yet. And sometimes the high school coaches, rush kids if they're not ready. There's a kid at North Chicago, Aaron Simpson, I believe, is a freshman. He's in Dickie Simpkins' AAU program, and he's only playing sophomore this year as a freshman. North Chicago's got a good squad, some upperclassmen, and I don't think it's the fact that he can't compete with these guys. It's just that, he's going to be a three-year varsity guy, and he's still looked highly upon by Brad Sturdy and the services and the coaching staff. So sometimes it's not maybe necessary or that important to push a guy. And just because a guy's not a four-year starter in high school doesn't mean that he's not going to be a terrific college player.
Of the four recruits that we have signed for 2009, who stands out as being ready, and who do you think may be a bust?
Well, I don't know if we're going to have any busts. You know, I haven't seen DJ Richardson. It's kind of interesting to me. It seems like people from Central Illinois or the Peoria area, obviously they speak highly, and DJ's the first guy they mention. And anybody north of I-80 or downtown here in the great city of Chicago will mention Brandon Paul. And both those guys are talked about. One will start, one will be the first guard off the bench. Don't forget we're losing our three seniors are all guards. And
are you absolutely convinced that we're going to play a three-guard offense next year?
Am I absolutely convinced? No, but odds are Probably, just because that's the way Bruce does things. We could get into...
Could you foresee a situation where Keller, Davis, and Tisdale are starting alongside McCamey and Legion?
Yeah, I could, and I wouldn't mind that a bit, actually.
By the way, this just in, Illinois 27th in the latest ESPN poll.
Okay, that's nice. I'm not going to get too hung up on that stuff. It's not where you start, it's where you're finished, right? But Keller had a nice game the other day. It was, now we're saying it's only Indiana, but I don't mind that at all. I think that that's fine with me, and if you did that, though, your first subs off the bench are going to be two first-year players, probably, in terms of the big man rotation, Simpson and Tyler Griffey, and then or Semrau. If he's kind of taken maybe a couple steps backwards, and I'm not sure what's going on there.
By the way, I saw a video of Griffey the other night. He looks great. He can step out. He can shoot the three. He's got very nice leaping ability, block shots. Really goes up hard, gets after the ball. Really a very advanced, highly skilled player who can do a lot of things on the basketball court.
Yeah, initially people thought that he might be a redshirt candidate, but I don't think so because, Griffey and Cole haven't really, I'm not sorry, not Griffey, Semrau and Cole really haven't contributed much and earned any playing time. And so the opportunity certainly is going to be there for Griffey.
My feelings about Semrau.
I
think Cole still has some upside. I think Semrau would be a really nice Mid-American Conference basketball player.
Well, the thing about Cole, and I like his skills, and he's a smart ball player, knows the system.
By the way, not a Mid-American star, but a nice Mid-American player.
Cole's situation is, who would he guard on defense? I mean, he probably couldn't guard a three, and I'm not sure if he's strong enough and tough enough to guard a four. So that's where he kind of is.
Has there been any word on his medical redshirt situation for last year?
I haven't heard, and I don't know if that'll come during the season or right at the end of the season. But you were out of town for the first two conference games, and you were back in town to see Saturdays if you spent time checking that out. But
I did watch the games on Slingbox. Great product, by the way. They're not a sponsor, but for $150, you can have Slingbox installed on your computer, no recurring charge, and you can watch games from your living room TV. You get the same channels anywhere in the world where there's internet. You can watch the game for free.
So you hook your computer up to the TV or
something? No, you just merely
turn on
the internet, and you get the TV through the internet.
Oh, okay. So it's probably better than the Big Ten Network.
Much better
feed
than the Big Ten. I was watching games in a foreign country, and the feed was much better than listening or watching the game from Chicago on the Big Ten Network feed.
Remind me, I got to contact the Big Ten Network because I watch a few games and it's just terrible. It freezes, and then when it starts again, the voice is ahead of the play. It goes into slow motion. And actually, I've watched a game or two, believe it or not, on Horizon League, and they must use a different company, a different service, because their feed is fine. But Big Ten Network, if you're out there, you got to get it together. I talked to some other people. It's just not me and my computer at home. Everyone's having the same problems. But let's go back to the conference opener at Purdue. I don't know how you thought about that. Certainly everyone thought at the beginning of the year that was a loss. No ifs, ands, buts about it. But actually, I told Dave and anyone that was here to listen prior to the game that game was winnable. I had a decent feeling about it. And we went out and played a heck of a game. It was both that game and the Michigan game, for unbiased college basketball fans who watched it, had to think that those were two terrific games.
Terrific games. I did watch them. I mean, it did help us that Purdue didn't have George Costanza for the game.
Kramer,
that's right. I knew it was one
Kramer.
Of those Seinfeld
I'm sorry. Games. I hate to correct you, but, he played a little. There was an interesting play at the end of the game. Him and Tisdale collided. It wasn't that hard. He went down and never came back in. It was, and nobody said what hurt or whatever. But then after Wisconsin beat Michigan at Michigan in their opener, I didn't have such a good feeling of us going to Ann Arbor just because I found it hard for to think that Michigan was going to drop the first two conference home games back to back. Sure enough, they came out all guns blazing, and the 10-point differential, I think, doesn't tell the story because it was like a 2-point game with a minute or so to go.
But you can't let a team shoot 50% from behind the arc.
Right.
You've got to guard Michigan, especially, who are so dependent on 3-point shooting. You've got to guard the arc.
Well, what I don't understand is, you know, we've talked about one of our main deficiencies, and it's not us, it's a lot of teams, is the dribble penetration. You know, if you got a good point guard, and it happened there that, you know, they got some penetration, and someone would drop off to try to help out, and then the guard would kick it back to the person whose man dropped off, and they were wide open.
Dave, what did he just say?
We didn't seem to rotate very well there. You understand what I'm saying.
No, I just wanted Dave behind the glass to interpret. I thought maybe you were speaking in tongues, another language.
But, you know, occasionally, although then in the second half, you know, at the end of the game where Michigan won it, we were slow afoot, we were tired, their guys penetrated, and they didn't have to kick it out because they went right to the basket.
By the way, I've heard a couple people say that. Why should we be tired?
I don't know. You know, it was just one of those things.
Maybe. Are we not a well-conditioned basketball team? Do we not play a deep enough bench? I thought we had some depth on this team. Why should our kids be tired in a situation like that?
I don't know if it was physical, mental. I don't recall exactly the rotation and if the minutes were lopsided. But there were a few plays at the end of the game at Ann Arbor where our defense just gave up easy layups, and that was it. But the game was there for us, and that leads us to this Wednesday's game. Huge game, I feel. You know, home game, you got to win your home games. Rematch with Michigan. I feel somehow we will win this game. But it's a big game because then Saturday we go to Michigan State, and you know, most people would say that's a loss. Michigan State is playing terrific right now. I think they're peaking maybe a little earlier than they normally do, but they look head and shoulders as the best team in the conference. You know, will we have a shot? Do we have a shot? You know, odds are probably terribly against us. But first things first, we got to beat Michigan at home. And then after the Michigan State game, we come back home for two more games against Ohio State and Wisconsin, and then go to Minnesota and have Iowa at home. So the schedule doesn't look that bad for us. And, again, you know, what we talk about, like 9-9, 10-8, at the beginning of the year, and certainly that seems very doable right now, the way we're going, and maybe even a little better than 10-8.
At the beginning of the year, I was actually on the low side of
that.
You were
below 500.
I had 8-8, 7-9, somewhere in that area. I had us losing three games in the non-conference.
There you go again. We have 18 games, I believe.
Oh, okay. So I had us at 9-9 or 8-10.
Right.
Thank you for correcting me.
Twice already in the first 20 minutes. I love it. You're not on your
little
rusty. By
the way, Buzz, you're a potted plant. The George Costanza was a layup joke line for you. I didn't need to be corrected. I just wanted you to say the Kramer name.
I was taking a swig of water and, you know,
okay.
Whatever.
Listening, you're listening to Talking Illini with Boz and Mr. G. You can reach us at 888-463-6748 or email us at talkingillini@yahoo.com. We'll be back in a moment with Mark Tupper.
Hey, Illini fans. Looking to win in the game of real estate? There's never been a better time to buy a new home. Interest rates are low, there are plenty of homes to choose from, and ultimately real estate is a great investment. Greg Fisher of Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage is experienced, professional, and dedicated. As your realtor, Greg can help you find the perfect new home. Contact Greg today at 847-681-4173 or learn more at gregshouses.com. Buy or sell with the man who knows his X's and O's. Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage is owned and operated by NRT LLC.
Step back in time when going out for dinner meant something really special. Step into Wildfire, a steak and chop house with the aura of a 1940s dinner club. private and semi-private rooms offer a variety of options for any social or business event. Order from our supper club menu served family style. Try our horseradish crusted filet mignon or Wildfire's delicious cedar plank salmon. Dine at any of our 8 Wildfire restaurant locations. Visit us on the web at wildfirerestaurant.com to find the location nearest you.
You'll find the car you want at RizzoCars.com. RizzoCars.com.
It's true. You will find the car you want at RizzoCars.com. Over 6,000 new and used cars, trucks, and vans available online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's so fast and so easy. RizzoCars.com is your one-stop auto purchase resource site. Build a new vehicle. Compare up to 5 vehicles at once. Access new vehicle reviews. Take a new car video test drive. RizzoCars.com also offers easy-to-qualify online financing, which helps to make your purchase simple and fast. Shop 13 new car franchises, including Ford, Chevy, Cadillac, Buick, Lincoln, Mercury, Acura, Porsche, Kia, Hummer, and Saab. So if you're tired and frustrated of driving from dealer to dealer, just remember,
you'll find the car you want at RizzoCars.com.
Raising the speed limit on the information superhighway. TalkZone.com.
TalkZone.com.
And now, let's get back in the game for more Talking Illini on TalkZone.com. Here are your hosts, Boz and Mr. G.
Hello, Illini Nation. This is Boz. Mr. G is back from 2 weeks off, and we're talking Illini on TalkZone.com. Give us a call at 888-463-6748 or email us at talkingillini@yahoo.com. After 1 o'clock, we're going to have Kenny Battle in studio. And is our first guest on the line? Yes, he is. Okay. And right now, we're going to bring our good friend in from Decatur, Mark Tupper. Tups, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Boz?
I'm doing, well, I won't say totally great. I'm fighting a little bug here.
He's playing, it's playing hard. Hi, Mark. Scott Gendell here.
What's up, guys?
Life is good.
We're going to talk a little basketball for a few minutes, then segue to football. Lots going on. Would you have imagined at the beginning of the season that, you know, the basketball team would be 14-2 and 2-1 the first three conference games?
Probably not. And I also would not. I hadn't given it much thought, but until the other day, I never imagined I would go to an Illinois-Indiana basketball game that was less a barometer of how good you are. You know, that Illinois-Indiana game is always a great test. And, you know, how you do in that game tells you a little bit of something about how your team is or where you need to be. And that game the other day, that was like playing an intramural game or something.
But, you know, I think it was a nice statement about Bruce Weber and the program that they went out and they took it seriously. They got off to a 19-2 lead, and they did what they had to do. They didn't let Indiana hang around in the game. They didn't let the emotion take over. They took care of business.
Yeah, I think that's right. They played well, and obviously Indiana's going to really struggle, particularly on the road. But and then they kept playing too, and then when it was time, they sort of, you know, dialed it down a little bit and just coasted home. But it was just crazy. I remember a couple lopsided games. I remember Self went over there to Bloomington
right.
And clobbered once, and you know, we've seen a couple of those, but I just don't remember one that, you know, basically 4 minutes into the game it was over.
Should we, as fans, feel really, really good about this, or feel a little degree of sympathy for Indiana because they're all new kids and a new coach, and the people there weren't involved in what kind of went on and happened the last couple of years that got our ire up, or do we just see that crimson jersey and the white Indiana and say, ah, that felt great?
I didn't feel much sympathy. I mean, I also didn't feel, I'll tell you what, I didn't like where the series had gone to in terms of just the bitterness and the anger and the awkwardness of it all. It had gone too far, and so I'm grateful to not have that. I want these games to mean something. I want there to be a great rivalry. I want there to, you know, really be an urgency for Illinois to win the game, and if you're wearing the other color, for them to win the game, whatever. But it got too nasty the last couple years, and we all understand why. I'm not saying that, you know, it was wrong. I'm just saying it wasn't what you want. You know, you want a good rivalry, but you don't want it to be that stuff where nobody's shaking hands, and where if you do shake hands, you run into the locker room and get the antibiotics out or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think that Bruce comported himself in a great way last year as it related to. I understand the bitterness. I understand, you know, his animus towards Samson, but I think he took it a little too far, and I think that he came off being a little bit whiny in the national media, especially. I do think you hate the jersey, and the hate is a strong word, but you know, there's a feeling that the guy with that jersey on is your enemy, and I thought there were way too many apologists on the other side for Samson last year, and that's something that I have a hard time letting go of, that all these people were so quick to defend Kelvin Samson, and now they don't give Bruce any credit for feeling the way he did last year.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from there, and I've kind of pushed that behind. I listened to the conversation now, Bruce talking about Crean talking about Bruce and Illinois. It's a much, much healthier dialogue, and that's where it ought to be. And you know, this game that we just experienced, you know, that was once in a, it might be once in a lifetime. Indiana's going to get back to respectability, and those games are going to be good and fun and interesting late into the games, and that's as they should be. But one the other day, I didn't even know how to react to it.
Who's got a bigger potty mouth, Kevin O'Neill or Crean?
Kevin O'Neill. He is by far the leader in the clubhouse.
I would think that Bruce and Crean have a decent relationship from their assistant coaching days and cross paths when Crean was with, you know, at Michigan State.
Yeah, I mean, you know, through Izzo, they both have some ties there, and I don't know what Bruce's relationship was per se when he was at Marquette, but I think Bruce, you know, is more than welcomes Crean into the league and thinks he's a good guy and has in common with him a guy who served his dues as a Big Ten assistant and then took over a program, did a nice job, and so yeah, I mean that's going to be a relatively healthy relationship.
Crean wears me out watching him. I mean, he doesn't pace; he like power walks back and forth the whole game. Man, I don't know. I'd like to see what his workout is.
Well, you know, and Bruce isn't exactly sitting on the bench either. You know, he's up and doing his thing as well, and so it's going to be interesting. I still think Indiana's going to win a game or two at home.
Yeah, I was going to say, they'll come up with beating somebody, hopefully that'll help us out down the road.
Well, hopefully it won't be us.
That might be, yeah, that's exactly.
It's not going to be us.
I don't think so. No. I know they've got Penn State coming up next week, I believe, and Penn State's going to be very hard to beat out there. I mean, and there's going to be a lot of tough games here now before we get through this. It looks to me like Michigan State's a little, maybe a half a notch above everybody, but I think you know, not enough to run away, and I think everybody else is in there slugging it out with Hummel back now, Purdue's back in the game.
Did Bruce say anything after the game about, I'm looking at the stat sheet here, Indiana actually had 35 rebounds to our 23 with 15 offensive rebounds.
You know, he said, "Well, you know, if you want to look for something, you know, they made a lot of shots. Illinois made a lot of shots. They moved the ball. They passed the ball. They dominated. You know, they just he wasn't too upset about the rebounding numbers. I'm sure he probably made a little reference to them with the fellas, but he was pretty happy all the way around.
So, some of the Indiana fans thought that we ran up the score, but I thought really Bruce backed off the pedal at about the 8-minute mark. He just freely substituted and didn't have any starters in the game the last 7 minutes of the game.
I thought he did too, and Meacham was out the last, I don't know how many minutes, what minute mark he went out, but he was out for quite a while there at the end, and he was doing most of the damage. So, I mean, you still got to play people, and you got to, you know, I thought they backed off just fine.
What do we have to do differently Wednesday night to beat Michigan?
Have to guard them better, no doubt about that. They really launched threes. They shot 40 in that game at Indiana last week when they were almost defeated there, ended up winning in overtime. They will really put the ball up in the air, and you've got to get out on people. I think they'll do a better job on Novak. I think they'll try to do a better job on Manny Harris, although they didn't do a bad job on Manny Harris in that game. And I just think naturally at home you're going to play a little bit better and be a little bit better prepared to win that game. I thought they played pretty well in that game until the last 6 minutes, and then they just had some breakdowns. Tisdale got, you know, taken to school on that one when he drove by to the rack, and then they had a couple of others too, and then they missed, what, 8 of their last 9 shots. So just wasn't a very good finish of the game for Illinois.
There's a lot of pressure on us Wednesday night to win this game, though. This game, if it's a game that we let up and we don't win, we're going to be out of the Big Ten race very early in this game.
Well, you can't. You're right. You can't lose this game now. I think statistically you could lose this game if you're going to make it up, but it becomes really difficult to try to get. What are you going to do? Turn around and win at Michigan State? I mean, that becomes less likely if your confidence takes that kind of a hit. No, you need to win this game. There's no question about it, and they need to be back to where they're holding serve at home against everybody, frankly.
Yeah, last year hopefully was an aberrant year because I do not want to ever get used to going into home games and not feeling like we should win every game we play at Assembly Hall.
I agree with that. I think that's exactly right. It's too bad they lost that game to Clemson, but Clemson's still undefeated, I believe, are they not?
They are. Yeah. Who would have thought that North Carolina would lose back-to-back games in the ACC?
How about that?
I mean, I look at the team. I thought, well, that's a pro team. They can't lose a game.
Well, I mean, there was a lot of talk about maybe this is the team that could run the table, a la Indiana. And holy cow, they lose 2 in a row.
Tubbs, what has helped to turn around Chester Frazier? He's got to be the most improved player in the conference. I don't know if you have a comeback player of the year for someone who's not coming back from injury, but, you know, why couldn't he have done this, you know, maybe last year?
Well, I don't think he had people to throw the ball to who could shoot it like he does now. I think that sometimes when he had the ball in his hands late in the shot clock and he looked over and saw Randall, or some other options that he thought, you know what, may not be a great shot in my hands, but it's not any worse than throwing it over there to one of those guys. And I think he just had to realize who he was, and that took a while, and that he can be an extraordinarily valuable player without ever putting up a shot.
Let's not get carried away. He is a role player with limited offensive ability. He does so many wonderful things for this team, but, you know, he's not a player that you ever thought you'd have to count on. And I still see the people debating this issue on message boards that they'd rather have Chester Frazier than Sherron Collins, and I think that people need to take a sanity test before they go there.
Well, I agree with you completely. However, I don't think he has limited offensive ability. I think he has limited scoring ability.
Okay, I'll buy that.
He really helps your offense by moving the ball, by handling the ball, by limiting turnovers, by getting it to people. And I saw an instance in a game, might have been at Purdue, when the shot clock was down to about 5. Okay, when it gets down to about 5, now you've got to make a decision. You've got to make a decision fairly quickly if the ball's in your hand. In the past, last year, the year before, whatever, he would wiggle his way in for an awkward shot and put up a shot, a regretful shot. And this time he wiggled his way in, and I don't think ever thought about shooting it, was really patient, could feel those seconds, and fired the ball either over to Meacham or Davis, and I can't recall, with about 2 seconds left. They were uncovered, and they hit a shot from the wing, and it was just a completely different approach to those last couple seconds. When he's wide open, that's one thing, but what's he taking? He's taking about 1 or 2 shots a game now, and they're decent shots. It may be a drive, it may be something in transition, or it may be the one wide open three. He's not shooting that shot clock shot that he was shooting in the past, and he's really become good with the ball in terms of assist to turnovers, and it's just made for a not a spectacular player by any stretch of the imagination, but a really steady guy who then turns around and plays his tail off on defense.
So if you were an opposing coach, would you guard him outside at all?
I would guard him because I think you benefit yourself by putting pressure on the ball. I would not guard him just to harass him as a shooter, but I would guard him to pressure him as a ball handler, because I think if you don't do something like that, it's too easy for him to get the ball to other people.
Are the coaches satisfied with what they've seen of Legion thus far? Obviously, there's still a ways to go and some upside. His shooting percentage hasn't been that great. But what do you hear from the coaches, and what's your take on his progress thus far and what they're going to expect out of him moving forward?
I think they're pretty happy with what he's done defensively. I think they're pretty happy with the things he's done non-shooting. I think that they expect him to shoot the ball better than he has. He shot it poorly the other day, no doubt. And I think they believe he will. I mean, I think they realize you're talking about a guy who's probably a little streaky and is still trying to get comfortable and getting into a game, you know, and probably rushing to make a contribution with his shot and just needs to kind of, you know, settle down and calm down. So I think, you know, I think overall they're okay with him. I think they expect better things from him as a shooter.
You know, we've got a mystery caller for you here, Mark,
okay.
Who wants you to desperately ask you a question regarding Illini football, and then we'll get back to basketball. Let's bring on, see if you recognize his voice, all right?
All right.
You know, Mr. Tupper, I think it's going to be so exciting Saturday in East Lansing that we're going to have to drink some chamomile tea on Friday night. Would you go for that?
Can we pour it in a scotch glass? Hello, Herbie.
Happy New Year, bud.
Welcome back from Florida.
Yes, good to be back.
Yeah.
And you did a good job of guiding the Illini as you guys have been talking. I think that Purdue win is really, you know, that's the one that sticks in my mind, because it shows you what can happen when everybody does what they want to do.
Hey, did anybody fall off their chair when they saw Greg Couch write a positive article on Illini basketball?
You know, I haven't seen his story. He was sitting next to me at the game, and we were talking throughout the game, and I would have guessed that he was writing that kind of a story, because he was simply talking about how much more enjoyable this team was to watch than last year, which I think is an accurate statement. And he was asking some questions and talking about some different things, but so I expected that kind of an art. I just haven't seen it yet. So,
were you surprised, Herb Gould?
No, I mean, Greg gives credit where credit is due. That said, you know, I guess that's the columnist role. As soon as you stub your toe, he's on the other side. But that's what we like in sports journalism these days.
Hey guys, what's going on with our football program here? I mean, is this a indicative, the coaching turmoil we're seeing at the end of this year, indicative of what was going on in this staff and maybe the root of some of our problems on the field as well?
Well, you know, the Loxley thing is different than the others. Loxley was a guy who's been on the verge of a head coaching job now for some time, and something came along for him there, and he decided to go with it, and that's that. I think the Sims thing is an indication that there was not a lot of happiness with the performance of the defensive line, and I think the Wolford thing, the offensive line situation, was more a deal where money and his relationship with Spurrier's kid, who they were on the staff together at Arizona, made for a situation he thought he was going to go for there. But I really like, now, you know, we don't know how this is going to play out, but I like the fact that Ron Zook has been so aggressive in his concept for redoing the defense by chasing after Larry Johnson Sr. from Penn State with a title and with some money, and making it awfully tempting for him, because if he would come, you would you just about wouldn't lose anything in terms of recruiting out in the East that you think you're going to lose with the loss of Loxley.
Herb, what's your take on it?
Yeah, I agree with everything Mark just said. I mean, I think that it's you know, there was some disappointment in what was going on with that defensive line, and Ron Zook is making some changes to, you know, try and head off any problems in that area next year. And I think the Larry Johnson hire would be a terrific one if they can get that done. Offensively, yeah, Wolford, that was just an offer he couldn't refuse. And I do like the offensive coordinator hire. I happened to see a couple of the TCU games, and I thought this fall that they really run some good stuff. And I think that, you know, Loxley's a tough guy to replace, but I think that Schultz has a chance to be really good.
They actually have a higher ratio of run plays than our offense ran the last couple of years. Does that bode well? Is that more the kind of offensive scheme that Zook wants to see?
You know, I don't know. I noticed that too, though, that they did run the ball more than Illinois did. A higher percentage of their plays were runs. I just watched that. I watched that Florida game the other night. You know, in the national championship game, and Urban Meyer just does some really neat things, some great inventive things, and he really mixes his plays up well. It's just and they've got, you know, they've got basically Percy Harvin coming in with Jared Faison, and I want to see some of that creativity on the field for Illinois this next fall. I think there's some real opportunities there between Regis Benn and Jared Faison to do some things that are out of the ordinary and give some defenses some things to think about.
Yeah, you know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see, you know, situations where somebody like Faison or Benn, maybe even keep them in for a couple seconds, and then you do delayed angles over the middle, let them catch the ball in space late in a possession and run in the open field. I don't see that enough from our wide receivers.
I think there's a lot of opportunities there, you know, and if you're going to bring Juice out onto the field as a, you know, with the look of a quarterback, and you're going to spread him out, you know, I wouldn't hesitate to throw the ball out to him. You know, I assume one of those guys, Regis or Faison, can throw the ball, you know, 15 yards. I don't know.
Well, you know, that's interesting, Tupps, because when I saw TCU, I think it was against BYU, they had a receiver who had played a lot of high school quarterback, but he was a real burner guy. And they just put him in the shotgun, and they put their quarterback wide, and they did exactly that. I mean, most of it was just running stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's what Schultz is going to bring to the table. I mean, he's very much backgrounded in that kind of innovative offense.
Well, maybe we'll use Eddie McGee a little more because he's got some speed, and so maybe they'll use him in that regard.
Yeah, that's a good point, Boz, because that, in fact, I was asking Eddie about that when he did go out there on the same lineup with Juice, and he said, well, it wouldn't work if we threw it because it's too obvious, but I don't know. I think that it gives you a lot of ways to mix it up, and that's really the way that you need to run offenses now. You know, you need to mix things up. You need to have the quarterback run the way Tebow did, and you need to put the quarterback wide if you got somebody that you can go to a single wing kind of a thing.
You know, the other thing is, the other day we were talking to Gunther after the Bruce's luncheon, and this was at a time when they had the same three openings. They had just filled the offensive coordinator job, but they had the defensive line opening and the offensive line opening, and Gunther threw out there, without question, threw out there, you know, hey, maybe there's going to be some more changes, and I really thought that we'd see a change in special teams. But
I was just going to ask that. You know, the fans are always chatting about that, and you know, that's an area that definitely did not perform last year. You know, frankly, I think Sims, I don't know, I kind of thought he was kind of put out there as a little scapegoat. The year before, he was the talk of the town because the D-line was terrific.
Yeah, that's somewhat true. I don't like the way the defense is set up, which if you bring in Larry Johnson, you have a chance to hand this off to a single coordinator. I'm not a big fan of the dual coordinators, you know, concept or whatever. I think I'd rather have one guy in charge calling the shots, and if it's him, so be it. But
well, it seems like the odd man out is going to be Mallory, and Dish will probably stay on in some capacity. Is that what you guys are hearing as well?
I don't know. I mean, that makes sense. There could be some more jumbling there too. You don't know how guys are going to react all of a sudden. I don't know what kind of money they gave to either of those guys when they gave them co-coordinator titles. I assume they threw a little bit at them.
Yeah, that's true. And then, you know, I guess it just is going to depend on whether their egos can deal with. I mean, if this goes down the way we would expect, that, you know, if Larry Johnson comes in as coordinator, you could, and then Mallory reverts to the DB's coach and Dish the linebackers. Knowing Dan Dish, I think that he can put his ego aside because he goes way back with Ron, and I think he could deal with that. With Mallory, I don't know him as well, but you know, you just kind of have to see how that plays out. I mean, the other side of it is that it's, you know, these things happen. I mean, head coaches go to defensive coordinator at times, and it's just a matter of accepting it and working together.
What about a situation like Notre Dame did, where they moved Brown, basically they kept Brown at defensive coordinator, they brought in an assistant head coach who ostensibly is calling the defensive sets, but they're giving the coordinator in Brown his title and his pride as a way of him saving face?
Well, you know, that's interesting because, for one thing, I think Reggie Mitchell's the assistant head coach at this point. And, you know, maybe you make an associate head coach, but those are titles. I think that Larry Johnson, if he's going to make a move, I think that he wants to be a defensive coordinator because he wants to have that experience. So I don't know that they can get around it that way, but maybe they can. I would.
Maybe we can make him ambassador to Liechtenstein or something like that.
There you go, or Indiana.
Well, will he be coordinator and D-line coach, or just coordinator and then someone else will be the D-line coach?
I would think he'd be coordinator and D-line coach.
Yeah, because he's pretty well versed in that D-line thing. And they, you know, I think that one of the disappointments with the defensive line this year was that they really had a lot of players there. I mean, they had a bunch of experienced guys, and they also had some younger kids who really still have huge upsides. You know, you look at Brenton Legit, and you throw them into the mix with the kids that were coming back. They really thought that defensive line was going to be an anchor of the team, and it just didn't turn out that way.
I told you I thought we were going to play a 5-6 next year, just no linebackers.
Well, that may happen yet. I'd like to see some, you know, you might be able to bundle some wide receivers and trade.
I don't know. It's curious as to who's going to be playing linebacker for this team next year. But I think, you know, once we get our defensive coordinator straightened out, we'll have better answers about that as well.
Well, I think it's easy. The guys that go out and show that they can tackle the opponent will get the nod. I mean, that was a huge deficiency last year also.
Was there any phase, and I'm asking Tupps and Herb this question, was there any phase of this football team that you would have graded out well last year?
Oh,
the place kicker surprised us in a positive way, didn't he?
Thanks, Tupps.
I thought the corners were pretty good. You know, I know that people thought, you know, the expectations were off the charts for Vontae, but I thought the corners were pretty decent.
I thought, now I'm a Decatur guy, but I thought Britt Miller played well.
Yeah, exactly.
And I thought that was, I mean, you know, coming in after Lehman, that's not an easy job, and I thought he did a great job.
But overall, you wouldn't grade the linebackers very high, though Miller graded high.
I wouldn't.
No.
I would not, and... you know, and the season kind of went in parts, too. I mean, I would have given Juice a pretty high mark after, the first five games or something.
Up until the Wisconsin game where he really got exposed, and our offense got exposed on the blitz packages that people were bringing at us.
Yeah, right. And, you know, I think the receiver core was pretty darn good. I mean, Ben might not have been as dominant as you thought, but Cumberland had some moments, and, you know, there was a lot there. I mean, if you get them the ball, they're gonna.
Jenkins showed some things. Schultz is inheriting a pretty good group there. That's got to be the best, deepest group of receivers Illinois has had in years.
Speaking of Cumberland, if one of you guys meets Schultz, ask him to please teach him how to do the jump ball thing in the end zone, because Loxley insisted you know, he was having the 5'10 guys do it because Cumberland couldn't do it, which I found hard to believe.
Yeah, we'll see some interesting changes. I'll tell you one thing, this is going to make spring ball real interesting, because we all want to learn a little bit about what Schultz has up his sleeve, and we're going to want to learn about these new guys that they bring in on the lines and so forth, and that's going to be very interesting, and we also are going to want to watch the competition at middle linebacker and some of these other spots, and I think, I mean, the other thing is that we just mentioned special teams, but I mean, isn't it about time that special teams started to look a little bit special? I mean, they've been very ordinary.
Well, we've called them indifferent teams on the show this year.
Well, there you
go.
You know, I can tell you, having been down at the BCS game, it was amazing to me how much Urban Meyer talked about special teams. And, of course, he's one of the best at that area. But, you know, for all the talk about offense and speed and everything, he was, you know, it just field position. He just kept saying field position. And that really is important. I mean, when you think about some of the games that Illinois lost this year, field position was really huge, you know, and you got to cut down turnovers and you got to bottle people up.
Is it remarkable that linebacker isn't the position that really scares me the most going into next year, that offensive line and our lack of production on the offensive line really were the ultimate downfall of this team this year. And I'm afraid about next year as well. We've got a lot of talent coming back at skill positions, but can we block?
Well, that's why I think the loss of or the change of coaches on the offensive line is not a bad thing. I've got to believe that a new guy coming in might be able to light a fire and somehow get a couple of guys going who have kind of, you know, we don't even talk about now. We don't talk about Jack Cornell. We don't talk about Posick. We don't talk about some of those guys. And I'm anxious to see who he thinks are the good linemen, who he thinks are guys that can do the job. Are they the same people that we were thinking about with the previous regime? I'll bet they're not.
But are you guys in agreement that that's the position that really will determine whether we're a very successful team next year?
Well, I think it's important, but, you know, the thing I look at with the offensive line from last fall is that two of the veteran guys were playing hurt, and there were so many young guys. I think, you know, you don't want to play true freshmen on an offensive line, but that's really encouraging for your program that those guys got that experience. The thing that concerns me about the offensive line is that I thought Wolford was really good. I think he was dynamic, and I think that the decline of, you know, the problem with the offensive line last fall was injuries and inexperience more so than the coach. I think sometimes we want to just pin it on the coach too much. In that case, I think they need to really, I want to see him get a guy who's going to do as good a job as Wolford did.
If this team doesn't get to a bowl game and maybe a decent bowl game next year, what is that going to do to Zook's status in terms of maybe the heat being turned up a little?
It hurts the way you look at him. I mean, I think they need to come back and be in a bowl game next year with a senior quarterback and with Aurelius Ben ought to be one of the best receivers in the country. And they do have other weapons. I would be disappointed if they didn't do that. I think people can look at it any way they want, but I was disappointed this year, and I think if you follow it up next year by going, 5-7 again, I think that'd be very disappointing.
Herb, any thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be. I mean, at the same time, I don't see any, you know, fans might be clamoring for a change at the head coaching level, but I don't see that as even a remote possibility.
Although I would say this, Herb, I think if we don't make a bowl game next year, the odds are we're not going to make it in a sixth year either, because you're going to have a new quarterback, you're going to have a lot of players that you're going to replace, you're not going to be as talented, and the likelihood is that you're going to have 5 out of 6 years without a bowl game, and I think that he will not last past a sixth year if he goes back-to-back years in years back-to-back-to-back years in 4, 5, and 6 not making a bowl game.
Well, that could be, but the changes, I just see a guy who keeps bringing in piles of talent, and the quarterback transition, it's so far down the road. I mean, and I think that, you know, we've seen some glimpses from Eddie McGee and this kid Charest, everybody. You know, I don't know that's too far away from me to even, yeah. I mean, what you're saying I wouldn't disagree with, but I don't see that as a likely scenario. I mean, yeah, if that happens, then you got to regroup.
How important is this hire, this DC hire?
I think it's pretty important because I particularly with what they've done here on the Larry Johnson pursuit, because you've targeted a guy that could really answer some questions for you. He's a proven guy on the defensive line. He's a Big Ten guy. He's a terrific recruiter out east, where you already have a stronghold. And then if you're successfully able to hire him, you also weaken Penn State.
That's right. And, you know, the other part is with Larry Johnson, you got to know that this is a stepping stone deal. He's not going to be there real long. But if he comes in and does a hell of a job for 2-3 years and then moves on, you know, you've accomplished your goal. But it is important. The other thing that I think is really important for Illinois is that they've got another tricky schedule next year. You know, just the way it sets up, the non-conference once again has a lot of places that are potential stumbling blocks. The early part of the Big Ten schedule, I don't have it in front of me, but I seem to remember that is, you know, a little bit perilous. I mean, I think that was one of the problems this year, was we all, within and outside the team, were looking at those first 5 games and saying, if they can just get through those first 5, they'll be, you know, in perfect position. And then they did that, and they kind of exhaled and lost that Minnesota game, and that just set things off in the wrong direction.
Herb, you were at the national championship game. Give us an idea of how, when you're watching those two teams, you know, what the difference is between that and the best two Big Ten teams, you know, playing on a Saturday afternoon in the fall. I mean, do you sit there and say, wow, this is, like, totally better, totally faster? These guys are two, three, four notches better. How do you feel when you watch that kind of game?
You know, especially with Florida, it's pretty night and day, because they've got exceptional athletes just about everywhere. And, yeah, it looks a lot different. You know, I mean, I think that there's a natural advantage for the teams in the South, because the talent is there. And, you know, some people will tell you that they can get those kids into school, you know, whether you buy that or not. I mean, the talent base is just stronger in the SEC. And you even saw it. I mean, some of the things that Oklahoma did, and I thought, I came away from that game thinking, boy, Bob Stoops is a guy who's going to be kicking himself when he goes back over that film. I mean, not taking points the two times they were on the goal line. And I think he did that out of respect for Florida, because he's just so afraid of what that offense could do. And you know, I mean, to get back to your point, though, yeah, it looks different. It really does look different. You know, when Illinois was playing well last year, you know, that at that Ohio State game, they were approaching it. But then, you know, you put them on the field against a USC. I mean, the talent thing is big, and then experience and coaching comes into it.
Speaking of USC, I think they're the best team. Who would win if they played Florida?
Yeah, I was tempted. I didn't want to get into that fray, but I was tempted to vote USC number one. And, you know, that's a real good point, too, Boz. I was talking to my friend Chris Dufresne from the LA Times out there, and he was making the point that with a change of maybe four or five plays over the last several years, USC could have been playing for their sixth straight national championship.
And, you know, the rumor, and I don't want to really harp on this too much, but the rumor is that before Oregon State, those kids were out partying till 5 in the morning. And I've heard that from USC students who were out with the football players the night before the game.
You know, they do have a loose locker room. You know, I don't know. I would hate to think that it got that extreme, that Pete doesn't, you know, say, hey, look, you know, night before the game, let's focus a little bit. It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, he just keeps those kids loose, and they've got such a just, you know, it's just like convoys of talent there, and I think they coach them up well. But, yeah, I mean, you look at the games that they've lost, oh, that have taken them out of the national championship. I mean, Oregon State, pretty quality team, you know, and that's on the road. But, I mean, they had a home loss to Stanford the year before. You know, some of the losses are very curious when you look at how good they are.
I just think every once in a while they lose focus. Listen, Tubbs, Herb, it's been an absolute joy to have both of you on the show today. Love you guys for coming on and really appreciate it. Interesting conversation regarding next year's football team and the coaching changes swirling around. I really think that a lot of these changes are good things for the program going forward.
I do too, and I'm excited for spring ball to start. It will be here before we know it. And Herbie, it's good to hear your voice. I assume I'll see you Wednesday?
I will be there Wednesday.
All right.
All right, well then, that's a sure win.
Thanks, guys.
You got it.
Bye now.
All right, thanks, guys.
See you guys.
We'll be back after the break with Kenny Battle.
Don't put off the things you should do today. Start a financial plan with AXA Advisors. AXA, financial protection. For more information, call Stephen King, financial consultant, 847-291-3669. That's 847-291-3669. Securities and investment advisory services offered through AXA Advisors, LLC, 212-314-4600. Member FINRA, SIPC.
The award-winning Sun Tracker Swivel Beach Chair is the only folding beach chair that swivels a complete 360 degrees. So whether you're basking in the sun or just watching the kids, you'll never need to get up to adjust to the optimal position. It's lightweight and folds to only 6 inches wide, so it's perfect for the beach, tailgate parties, sporting events, and more. Anywhere you take a folding chair, you'll want to take the Sun Tracker. To learn more or to order yours today, visit suntracker.com. Or call 888-786-8725. Sun Tracker, the ultimate swivel beach chair. A proud sponsor of Talking Illini with Boz and Mr. G. Check it out at suntracker.com.
You find the car you want at RizzoCars.com.
It's true. You will find the car you want at RizzaCars.com. Over 6,000 new and used cars, trucks, and vans available online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's so fast and so easy. RizzaCars.com is your one-stop auto purchase resource site. Build a new vehicle, compare up to 5 vehicles at once, access new vehicle reviews, take a new car video test drive. RizzaCars.com also offers easy-to-qualify online financing, which helps to make your purchase simple and fast. Shop 13 new car franchises, including Ford, Chevy, Cadillac, Buick, Lincoln, Mercury, Acura, Porsche, Kia, Hummer, and Saab. So if you're tired and frustrated of driving from dealer to dealer, just remember,
you'll find the car you want at RizzoCars.com.